Coming up on the Kevin O'Connor Show, got my friend Damon Rangula talking about the Lakers, Spurs, Warriors, the Mavs, and some of our first impressions from the big trade deadline additions. Then I bring on John Krasinski to talk about the latest news involving the Minnesota Timberwolves, DeAndre Hunter's debut with the Cavs as well, and then I close the show answering a bunch of your mailbag questions. All that's coming up next. Joining me now to discuss some of our first impressions from the post-trade deadline around the whole NBA is my friend Damon Rangula. Damon, what's up, man?
How you doing, man? Crazy times.
Crazy, crazy times. The craziest moment of tonight for me was second quarter. Lakers are up 18 points early in the second quarter at 7:44 on the box score, and it says Luka Doncic enters the game for LeBron James. That's the moment it hit me, because like Luka goes in for LeBron, and the first play he drives the basket, draws three defenders in the paint, five guys are looking at him, and then he floats a kick out to Rui Hachimura for a wide open three-pointer in the corner. And it just, in that moment, it hit me. I'm just like, they're always going to have LeBron or Luka on the floor at all times, all 48 minutes. How is this real?
Man, I am not kidding you. The amount of, can you believe this is real, messages that have been exchanged just between like messages and group chats and stuff like that. It's very rare when you all have like the same reaction to the same news. And across the Laker landscape, it's been just, can you believe this is real life? And also, as a collective, there's like a humbling about it where we're not even like puffing our chest out. Like, this is not a typical Laker acquisition where it's like a free agent finds his way to, you know, the Lakers like LeBron did. Or we draft Kobe Bryant, or, you know, we draft Magic Johnson, or somebody demands a trade like Anthony Davis or back in the day, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. To be handed this out of nowhere in the middle of the night, and then to watch that exact sequence you're talking about is the exact time where I was like, this is absurd. It is the exact same moment I felt like, I still cannot believe this is real life. I really cannot.
Didn't Rob Pelinka use the word gift during the introduction press conference? He says it's a gift.
Well, in fairness, he also said that about KCP. saying he was mana from heaven. So, you know, it's not the most reliable narrator, but yeah, man, this is absurd. I mean, I just, beyond everything, I just had a blast soaking it all in today. Like, there's, Utah was a perfect opponent where the game really was never in question, nor did the specifics really matter. Like, it's going to take a while for us to really see Luke and LeBron in situational basketball moments. And right now it's just get them out there. You know, Luka was on a minutes restriction tonight, so I noticed that we reference Luka coming in for LeBron. I think JJ is still paired most of their minutes together, especially early in the game, because I think these are really valuable reps for them to play together as much as possible, just to kind of get into the groove of it. But yeah, long term, between Austin Reeves, LeBron, and Luka in a playoff round, in a playoff game, not only one, you're probably gonna have two of those three on the court almost at all times. And I just, I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's at, like, you nailed it. This game tonight, blowout win over the Jazz. They're a tanking team. It's, you know, the results aren't super relevant here. They, like, there'll be tougher tests to come. But LeBron, great again tonight, 24 points in his 29 minutes on 10 of 17. Luka, only 5 for 14 from the field, but it's the first time he's played in quite a long time. Only 1 of 7 from 3, but even still, in his limited minutes, I mentioned the kick-out pass to Rui Hachimura, some of the drives to the rim that he had.
Dude, the touchdown pass to LeBron.
Yes. Already you can see a little bit of that connection. He had the one that was deflected in the second half as well. Yep. But he's looking for LeBron on those runouts. Yep. And they had a play, I think it was, middle third quarter or something like that. They passed the ball back and forth a few times. Luka missed the three after he got it back from LeBron. But I think you can see the hints of chemistry already. And that goes back to the pregame quote with LeBron in the huddle. He calling back to his old tweet about Kevin Love. Don't fit out, fit in. He says the opposite to Luca.
Yep.
Don't fit in, fit out, be you.
I will credit LeBron. I think my number one worry is a weird word to say, so I'm not going to say that. My number one, I'd say if you power rank my things to be worried about, is I worry that Luca will be a little too differential, and two, I don't want to step on any toes. We need that MF-er, the playoff MF-er, to show himself and for him to feel comfortable to do that and say, hey, we're dragging right now. We need to win this game. Get on my back. And it's I totally understand, like, if he'll be reticent to do that, obviously because, you know, it's LeBron freaking James who can also do that. But I think that LeBron pushing that right now is truly like just perfect leadership, the perfect tone to strike right now. Luke was announced last today. Like, I've been impressed so far how LeBron has handled the whole situation. It's a very delicate balance because, yes, we can joke about the fact that, you know, I'm sure he's happy that, you know, they brought in Luka, but Anthony Davis was genuinely his best friend on the team. They won a championship together, and he's had to navigate this sort of tricky balance of being very respectful of Anthony Davis and also bringing Luka on board. And actually, to maximize this partnership, he needs to embolden and empower Luka. And so far, early returns have been good. It's very early, but let's see.
Yeah, wearing the number 77 warm-up jersey as well. All these little things definitely add up. You know, I think for LeBron, you're right. It is great leadership so far. It's setting the right tone. It's the way it should be.
Yep.
AD, there are moments and stretches that he was better than LeBron, but this is really the first time in LeBron's entire career that he's going to be the second best player most nights behind Luka. And then, LeBron is still one of the 5 to 10 best players in the world at age 40.
When you see him, like, during that Knicks game, he started believing in this team, like, that this team could actually do something, even though, I mean, who knows how much he knew and all that. But there was this belief, not only amongst LeBron, but when LeBron has that energy, the whole team has a different energy. You saw Rui started picking it up. Austin Reeves has been pretty consistent, but he's stepped up even more. And Gabe Vincent has stepped up. And, like, you're seeing signs of true belief even before Luka was acquired. And, yeah, now it's just going to the next level.
I mean, right now, the Lakers, you know, in the standings, they're only a couple games back from Memphis for the 2 seed, 2.5 games back from them. So they're still in this, like, for a chance to get home court, to have a great seeding in the postseason. And obviously, as tight as things are in the West, you know, a couple losses, suddenly they're down to the 7 seed. They're only up 3.5 on Minnesota for the 7 spot right now. But ultimately, that Mark Williams trade being rescinded here due to the Lakers' physical, it does mean that a lot's going on Jackson Hayes.
Yep.
Reports where it came out on Monday afternoon that Alex Len is not going to be signing with the Pacers. I've been told it's, you know, everything but signing on the dotted line that he's going to be going to the Lakers. So in all likelihood, the Lakers will be going with Jackson Hayes, Alex Len, who wasn't even getting minutes for the Kings and is just a very he's okay. Very average center.
It's not very inspiring. I will say Jackson Hayes, in terms of his energy and his, he's been running the floor really hard.
Sets a tone, man.
He's been a perfect lob threat, and Luka's going to have a lot of fun throwing lobs to him. It is a problem. It is, obviously, when you look at the roster, it is the number one problem. It's why they were so aggressive in trading for Mark Williams in the first place. The first press conference when Rob Pelinka introduced Luka, he very clearly stated that that is what they want to improve. And yeah, it's just a strange situation. It's very clear that this roster won't be complete until the offseason. But hey, you got Jackson Hayes, like you said, Alex Len. There's going to be some Vando. There's going to be some LeBron at the 5. Like, it's going to be sort of, it's going to be everybody kind of pitching in and trying to makeshift a competent-ish rotation at that 5.
You mentioned LeBron at the 5. We did see for a short spurt DFS, LeBron, Luka, Rui, Reeves. That's the small 5-man lineup I think we're going to see a lot. Maybe sometimes Vando in there. Sometimes it might be somebody instead of Reeves. Whatever the configuration. But those 5, that's still a big 5. Like, they're long, lengthy, versatile. They just don't have the five out there. But I do think that small ball lineup, maybe they could end up using that to their advantage with full-on five-out spacing. LeBron's become an elite shooter. Rui's over 40% this year. Luka can get hot at any time. Reeves is very good. DFS is a good spot-up guy. That lineup has versatility on defense, a ton of attack points with a bunch of guys who can handle the ball. Even Rui can attack a closeout and hit a pull-up. I think that small lineup could have been useful for them, even if they had Mark Williams.
That's right.
So I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, they were experimenting with LeBron at the 5 minutes. Like, I mean, they did that in New York when they won. They had moments of that. And it's really funny, like, just how quickly things turn around. When they acquired DFS, who knew that DFS having great chemistry with Luka Doncic was certainly going to become relevant at some point this season? But they have great chemistry. You know, we may even get some Markieff Morris appearances. I mean, yeah, it's hard to be very, very confident about this. But at the same time, I think that's small ball five lineup, even though, Luka as the point guard is not exactly small. I think that'll probably be their most interesting look and probably their crunch time lineup.
Shams Charania posted on X in the middle of the game that the Hornets have been in contact with the NBA as they explore options to dispute the Lakers' failed physical assessment of Mark Williams. I have not spoken to anybody in the league office about this. I haven't spoken to anybody about it since it posted because I've been recording my pod, been watching games tonight. Those will be conversations for Tuesday and the rest of the week, and I'm sure Shams and others will report more as well. But I do wonder if the story's not dead yet. I wonder, like, could there be another chapter here?
I mean, it's already been like one of the craziest stretches of like few weeks in NBA history. Let's just make it crazier. At this point, it's really funny, like where Charlotte had their press release initially saying, hey, we didn't even want to trade and the Lakers came at us so aggressively.
And now
like 24 hours later, we got this saying, no, they have to take him.
Even the Nurkic side with that situation, they put Nurkic on the injury report as trade pending. I checked in with a bunch of sources about that with both teams, other people around the league, and they all said the trade's done. It's over. Well, I don't know. I don't get why Charlotte's listing him as trade pending. And so, you know, Gambo, a Suns radio guy, had to clarify trade's done. Trade's done.
That's really funny.
And it is done. Nurkic is with the Charlotte Hornets. That deal is done. But all of this has been so weird
for
the Hornets. And now you have this.
This is one of those things where I was really excited when they first traded for him. Now that I'm totally spooked by the physicals. It was a very aggressive move. I justified it by saying if you combine what the Lakers sent for Luka and then you combine it with that, I'm okay with the whole entire package. At this point, I'm just like, nope, we're good. Jackson Hayes is our guy. Dalton Connect is our guy. We're set.
I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll work out for the best for both sides. But Mark Williams, undeniably. I mean, I know I was super in support of the acquisition. I said it's a home run acquisition. The Lakers go from A+ to A+++++ getting Mark Williams. But
hey, man, that heater Tom Haberstroh was not for it. So I don't know.
No,
I don't know who's going to be right about that.
Tom might have been spot on because it is true.
Tom might be right.
it is true that Mark Williams has not looked the same defensively this year as he has in past years. But how much of that is because the Hornets are trash?
We
saw this play out with PJ Washington. It was the same thing then. People said, oh, he's so inconsistent, you can't rely on him. Well, he goes to Dallas, and they're in a championship contending situation.
If you've seen it once, and you're like, okay, this guy has it, the motivation will go up and down in a situation like Charlotte is in this year. I totally see that. But we have seen flashes of it, and so I totally understand the gamble that they were making, but...
Injuries are different. If there's injury concerns,
I'm out with that issue.
Well, we mentioned PJ Washington. Let's talk about Dallas tonight.
Oh boy,
strange night in Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Multiple fans got ejected, including one that mouthed "Fire Nico" on the Jumbotron. Jason Kidd didn't talk post game. That's weird. Boy. That doesn't happen. Coaches don't not talk on post game. They always talk. always talk. And so that's a strange thing that I'm sure we'll hear more about in the morning. Derek Lively's been out. Daniel Gafford, their starting center, sprained his knee in the first half. The Mavs owner got booed sitting at his courtside seat, got booed again walking off. And the Mavs lost in overtime to a game winner by DeMar DeRozan. After Anthony Davis has an unbelievable MVP caliber 80 first half over the weekend, 24 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, screaming at the crowd, I'm here, I'm here. But then it was really the full 80 experience because he was invisible in the third quarter, as we've seen many, many times. One dominant half, then invisible, and then he misses the remainder of the game due to an injury that we now know could keep him out for multiple weeks or even longer. Mark Stein on his Substack said indefinitely. It's been reported elsewhere, at least multiple weeks with a core injury. This is really, really scary times for the Mavericks, Thumman.
Man, I this is the strangest situation for me to be in because, like, and I mentioned this to you, like, earlier in this podcast where, like, Lakers fans legitimately, I mean, this is not like a public thing. This is even privately. There's universal sympathy for Mavericks fans because I think, and you know, I seriously don't mean this like in an arrogant way. I think Laker fans, we more than most fan bases across sports understand the value of a franchise centerpiece like Luka Doncic. So we understand the gravity of this kind of a transaction happening overnight, unprompted, you know, not like a trade demand situation or something like that. And this was like a bond, a social contract between an organization, franchise, Dallas Mavericks, the city, and the fans. And I love Anthony Davis. I love Max Christie. I seriously, like that first half, I was legitimately thrilled at how electric it looked. And like that specific construct of a team that's like bully ball, just very physical, at the rim attack.
So fun, man.
Is my favorite kind of roster. It reminds me of the 2020 Laker team that won the title. And I was genuinely
excited. The big lob, all that. Like it's big, just so freaking fun.
Right. Big, fast, aggressive. And that's what they were playing like. And I legitimately was thrilled. Like I was so happy. I'm like, listen, this. I hope that they can really make a real run this season, and for it to come crumbling down so fast, like it legitimately breaks my heart for them. I also think like, hey man, this is why like we've read all the justifications at this point. Ownership has done a poor job of explaining it. The general manager has done a poor job of explaining it. I do buy it at face value. I don't believe in any of the conspiracies. They legitimately thought this maximizes their chances right now. And I mean, I really think that they believe that. And it just such a blow for this to happen in the first game and losing Gafford now. And it's just like, it's crumbling apart. And in a situation like this disintegrates the whole thing. Like if this falls apart, I don't know how you can put this together.
It's a joke of a franchise, man.
Yeah,
it's a joke. Sucks. Like you're
it legitimately sucks. Like I don't want to see it. I'm obviously the benefactor, right? But I still don't want to see it like this.
I know. It's just all of it.
I will celebrate. Listen, I will sell. I enjoyed today, but I'm not going to sell. I'm not going to gloat to the fans. I want to hug those fans and say, sure. Listen, I'm with you.
I mean, you can feel both ways. Like you can feel happy for your own franchise, but also sad for the other, especially considering, I mean, they're throwing fans out. They're ejecting fans. The coach isn't talking after the game. You get fans
maybe
protesting.
Not the best sign. Maybe not the best sign.
I don't feel good about it at all. For a moment, let me look. I said to you in a text over last week or something like that. It's like, I hope this turns into a good story. I hope like they can embrace it and it becomes I don't mean get over it.
The crowd inside sounded awesome.
Yes, and like I hope it can become something where it's like, you know, in the movie Fargo, the poster with all the fish. It's like, maybe you're right and they're wrong. It's like I would love if Nico can be that. Like
executive
I think it would be such
year,
a cool
baby.
Story, right? Yeah. Like wouldn't it be a great story?
Yep.
And for a moment in that first half over the weekend, I'm like, wow, this is the vision.
Yep.
But you know, like obviously, even then, in those moments, you're like, well, can Kyrie carry them all the way? No. There's no way. And then Edie goes down, and the dream just gets immediately deflated. And it's only gotten worse since then. I mean, like I said, Dumbin, Jake Kidd not talking tonight is weird. That is strange. Like, would it shock you at all if we get a Shams bomb saying Jason Kidd has quit? Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Nothing at this point would surprise me. I am a little worried because there was supposed to be an Anthony Davis update, and I'm worried if that's worse than expected, and maybe Jason Kidd was advised not to say anything today. I'm worried about that. I am worried about just if Jason Kidd doesn't feel comfortable and the teams doesn't feel comfortable communicating with the fans right now. And that's just, there should be no franchise in a situation like this. And it's just, I feel horrible.
Well, I mean, right now the Mavericks are 4.5 games separated from the 9th best lottery odds.
Oh boy.
And I don't even want to go there, but I have to go there because you have 80 out multiple weeks with an adductor strain, and who knows, it could be way longer. Lively is out until April-ish with a right ankle stress fracture, and now Daniel Gafford out for, you know, maybe days, maybe weeks with a knee sprain. He only played 10 minutes and didn't look good when he was walking off the floor. And behind the Mavs in the standings, you have the Kings, who are trying to win every freaking game right now. The Warriors, who are starting to look better with Jimmy Butler, they're trying to win every game. The Suns, they're trying to win every game. And the Spurs, all four of those teams are fighting like hell to make the playoffs, whereas the Mavericks, even Dwight Powell is out. They don't have a five. They don't have spirit. They don't have the fans behind them. I just wonder if maybe this is where this is going to go, where the Mavericks just free fall down and end up in the lottery.
Kevin, the biggest lie you've ever told is that you're upset about this. There's nothing you enjoy more than talking about teams tanking and blowing it up. So let's just set the record straight. You would like nothing more for them to lose the rest of the way, right?
Poop for Cooper. Go,
end up with Cooper. This is what you like doing. Another this is who guy. You are. This is who
time,
you are.
And this time an American-born white guy, too.
This is what you want. This is what you really want. This is what you've been here for.
The whole time by Nico.
it's the problem is it's beyond difficult to sell a win now move and a day later pivot to we're going to try to get into the lottery. I just think if they announce right now that Anthony Davis will miss 3 weeks, let's say, I think that they're going to try and get just try to stay afloat, stay at that 10-9 seed and make a go at it, because I don't see how they can justify it. Now, if they do have
to
pivot
there. If he needs surgery, that changes everything.
Right, it changes everything. But then now you're like, if we waste another year, is Kyrie going to come to us in the summer and say, all right, well, I mean, if this is where we are as a franchise. I don't know. It is, unfortunately, if they, so what is their pick protection? It's top 10 protected or what? Like, they just have it?
They just have their pick, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess, unfortunately, you are right. Like, at some point, you have to look at the odds. I mean, listen, Nico Harrison did make this decision once already when it was unpopular, right? There was a lot of think pieces. I was one of them, honestly. I thought it was a horrible look that you have Luka and Kyrie and you're going to actually tank for keeping your pick, and it actually worked out for them. So maybe that is the right outcome, and maybe at this point you're like, hey, the fans hate us enough already, they can't hate us anymore, so let's just do it then. I guess that would be the way to justify it.
Let's talk about two of the teams behind the Mavericks in the standings right now. The Spurs, we saw Fox and Wemby play their fourth game together in a game that was probably a bit too close against the Wizards, but the game being close, I thought, did provide some opportunity to see some of the chemistry developing. They haven't practiced together yet, De'Aaron Fox and Victor Wembanyama, but in the final 5 minutes, we saw a pick and roll where Fox drove downhill, hit Wemby for a lob. I think Wemby, I want to see more rolls, less pops, as good as he is from three. Getting those at-rim chances with Fox, I think, is going to increase his efficiency even more. And then there was a play, Wemby got the ball in the high post. Fox was in the corner, cut back door. Victor passed to him, and that's another situation. Wemby, the playmaker. But overall, through four games, the Spurs have a minus 5.9 net rating in the four games with Fox and Wemby on the floor together. I'm not reading into that too much. We've only seen Fox, Wemby, and Castle on the floor for only 28 minutes together through those four games. Not enough. The lineups are out of whack. Why is Chris Paul still starting? I don't understand why he's still starting in these games. Put Castle in there. Castle plays 20 minutes against the Wizards tonight. Makes no sense to me at all, as great as he's been. Ultimately, though, I mean, some ups, some downs. Overall, though, I'm pretty impressed by what we saw in the closing 4 to 5 minutes of the game tonight against the Wizards.
Yeah, and I think you highlighted the right thing, where I think that I trust Fox and Wemby to figure it out. I really do. I thought that, listen, I had a lot of criticisms for the way Sacramento was run. I also had a lot of criticisms for Sabonis itself, like as a centerpiece of a team to win. But the chemistry that Fox and Sabonis developed in a pretty short order, and it was very, like, their offense was extremely high level, really complex, just different reads, different types of pick and roll plays and all that stuff. Like, I trust that Fox and Wemby will get that together. It is everything around them that I think that they as an organization really need to figure it out. I think your Chris Paul point is a great one. Are the San Antonio Spurs in it still as a cute story, the developmental kind of slow pace? Hey, Chris Paul is sort of the captain on the floor. Out of respect, we're going to defer to him and do this. Or are you going to say, no, we have to make the playoffs. The best call for this team is Chris Paul to be a one shift player, not a 2-3-4 shift player. And are they as an organization ready to take the next step? And unfortunately, you know, we haven't heard much about it. I would be curious to know what condition Popovich is in. We really want to see him back, obviously. But maybe not on the sidelines yet, but maybe this is where he can start getting his presence, and the front office can sort of saying, hey, let's accelerate a little bit. We got our guy now. You know, the pace of the franchise needs to accelerate a little bit. And it's not a nice to have position to be in the playoffs this year. No, we must make the playoffs this year and have that as your North Star. Get Wemby these reps. Get Wemby these big game reps with Fox, and really know where you stand as a franchise. I love the trade they made. They didn't go all in, but they also took a step. And I think for a team in this situation, it was the best outcome that they could have hoped for. And if you really get into the playoffs now, it also helps you make the right assessment for what your team needs moving forward and where the gaps are. And hey, is Stephon Castle going to be able to step up? Or is Jeremy Sohan going to be able to step up? Will he be able to play in the playoffs? Will he get exposed in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera? And you start putting these data points together so you can make more informed decisions. And that's what I really want to see, because that'll ultimately put Wemby in the best spot. And we all want to see Wemby just get to the top and see how that looks.
I think you're spot on. It's critical for them to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so disappointing to me to still see Chris Paul in that starting lineup.
Yeah, I was surprised. Yeah.
It makes no sense. And some of these whack rotations that they're rolling with right now, like I said, Castle playing 20 minutes is
can't do it. Yeah.
So goofy.
Yeah, can't
do it.
It
is so silly to me. And Chris Paul, if he's unwilling to come off the bench, I'd just get rid of him. Honestly, that might be harsh, but dude, like, it, you got to come off the bench at this point. You have De'Aaron Fox on the team, who is a very high level point guard. Chris Paul slows things down. You want to play faster with Victor and Fox. Why are they starting together? You have a 6-foot spot up shooter? No. He should be a backup that's helping run the point with the bench guys and staggering with Fox, playing lesser minutes and making an impact. But if he doesn't want to accept that, I just move on now, personally. I mean, I don't know. Even when the Spurs were looking pretty solid earlier in the year, I was like, I don't know. I don't.
You were worried about the pace all season.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. It's too slow, man. It just felt too slow.
I mean,
slow.
You also
it
set,
still does.
I think fast. You also set an organizational expectation for Wemby and everybody else. Like, hey, we've set our goal to the playoffs. We think we need to play fast. Chris, sorry, it's not going to work out. If you're not willing to come off the bench, letting you go is a sign that, hey, it's an organizational sign that we mean business and we are only about winning. And we expect Chris Paul to be a professional, come off the bench, do whatever he needs to do. And if that's not good for him, you send a message to everybody, that full locker room. You send a message to Wemby like, hey, we're not messing around.
Yeah, I mean, I completely understand the veteran aspect of it, but I'd much rather see Sohan get more than 21 minutes and Castle get more than 20 minutes.
Just, gotta see it. Gotta see it.
Gotta see it from those. Those are your core pieces, because you need to invest in the future while also trying to make the postseason now and Paul playing 30 plus minutes works against both. Let's talk about the Warriors. Jimmy Butler played his second game for Golden State. He had 20 points on Monday night on 12 of 15 from the free throw line after having 25 points on 11 of 13 from the line in game one. We've seen Butler cutting to the rim. We've seen him at the high post and the low post. They're plugging him into different places. Of course, they only faced the Bucks team without Giannis. They have not faced great opponents. They faced the Bulls in his debut. Tougher test Thursday against the Rockets. That'll be the real tough one before the break. They face the Mavericks on Wednesday as well. But overall, looks good. Looks good, Dumbin.
I was so confused by some of the trepidation behind people thinking that, hey, I don't know if Jimmy will fit on the Warriors and this and that. Look, man. Those guys, like, they're winners, just straight up. They're winners. And I know Jimmy has created some ruckus in a couple of situations, but at the end of the day...
All of the situations.
All that is true. And, you know, the thing is, the Warriors are in a situation where I think worrying about anything beyond literally this season is just a fool's errand. You have Steph Curry, you have Draymond. This literally, like, this season could be their last run. Actually, could be. Like, it could just fall apart after this season. Steph Curry's a small guard. Draymond is, you know, he's had health issues recently. And so it's just like, just do it. I was fully in favor of the move. And I think Jimmy has shown early on what he can provide. Dude, Steph was doing so much. Like, if he was not carrying everything on offense, this team has been in bad shape. This is not just a this season thing. This has been a consistent issue for them. And you can see, like, it's funny how there's so many similarities at this point between Steph and LeBron. Steph looks like a new man since they brought in Jimmy.
Just totally because rejuvenated. He's
like, totally rejuvenated because he's like, oh my goodness, I don't have to do it all anymore. Like, Jimmy can get to the freaking line. Just do something, right? And so Steph is rejuvenated. Steph is bought in. It elevates the whole team. And look, I think that the Jimmy contract, that the extension they signed, probably not going to age well. I think that this experiment itself, we might look at it, maybe not this season or next season, but after that, and be like, this is looking ugly. Like, the, you know, this is really nasty. And I say, so what? You did right by Steph. This is you're at the stage in your franchise, in this franchise's run, where it's like, this is our one shot. It is what it is. We can't be doing this light years thinking of what's going to be looking, what's our team going to look like in 4 years and what are our draft pick situation and that. Screw it all, man. You do right by stuff right now and you figure the rest out later. And it looks okay to me so far.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great so far. And Steph, as you said, looks rejuvenated. 38 points against the Bucks, 34 points against the Bulls. And that comes
and
after...
And happy. He looks happy.
And happy, exactly. Yep. And so for Steph, I think if you're like splitting his season up, if you're looking at everything leading up to the Butler trade and the two games since, everything leading up, Steph's been like the 20th best guy in the league, roughly. Like, he has not been himself, lower volume, lower efficiency, getting attacked on defense. He has not looked like his full self at all. Had a couple, you know, issues with injuries as well, playing into that as well.
But by the way, I said body language too wasn't perfect. Like, it wasn't great.
And then the two games since then, he looks like top 10 Steph. Still, yep. Top five Steph. Yep. Just that same old guy. So I think
just
for the
a little
Warriors,
bit of belief is all you need sometimes.
Yes, exactly. And so I think for the Warriors moving forward in the season, Butler undeniably adds a new dimension. I'm not sure how sustainable it will be, him getting to the free throw line 10 plus times per game, but it is definitely, I think it was maybe Butler after that first game talking about, you know, like, this is the formula, me in the interior, Steph on the perimeter. It's very basic, but kind of true. Like, Jimmy Butler takes half of his shots in the restricted area this season, 50% of his shots in the restricted area. And it's over 40% in his career. Like, he lives in the restricted area, lives in the paint. And so the Warriors don't have a guy like that. The Warriors are near the bottom of the league in getting to the basket. Jimmy Butler adds a completely new dimension there. Even if he's not able to run pick and roll like he prefers to, he's doing it from cuts, he's doing it from post-ups, and it's looking good. So I look forward to seeing them, especially that Thursday game against Houston. Houston's defense is tremendous.
That's
going to be a really good one to watch right before All-Star weekend.
No, man. Listen, the Rockets are the kind of tough young test that I do want to see how the Warriors respond to. The Warriors are, even with Jimmy, right, they're still a pretty old team, and the Rockets are, man, they're going to run up and down, and they're going to be tough and physical. And this is where you see actually how much of the added dimension that Jimmy brings, how much it'll help their situation, or will it show that, hey, you know, there's still some issues here?
Well, thank you for joining me today, Dumb, and I appreciate it, man. Coming up next, we have John Krasinski talking Minnesota Timberwolves. Now joining me from theathletic.com is John Krasinski. John, what's up, man?
What's up, KOC?
Good to see you, man. We just got done watching a big Minnesota Timberwolves loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, 128-107. We'll talk about the ownership news a little bit later. First, I want to touch on the game. From the Minnesota side of things here, another big night for Ant. 44 points, no Julius Randle in the lineup. Naz Reid started this game. One of my frustrations, John, watching the Wolves this year, I'm a Naz Reid guy. I love Naz Reid. Why is it that sometimes I tune in and I watch the Timberwolves and I'm expecting to see Naz Reid, cat-like, go for 30 points, and then I find myself watching these games like, oh man, they're really missing Julius Randle, and I'm not a Randle guy. How is it that Naz Reid goes through these spurts where he's so inconsistent? It's so frustrating to me, John.
Yeah, Kevin, there's some inconsistency there. I think this was one of the rare off nights he's had in a while. I mean, he has been lights out from 3-point range since the turn of the year into 2025. I think he's shooting like 57% before tonight, starts 0 for 5. It just seemed like this was one of those games that almost nobody had it going. And I mean, the Wolves were 0 for 16 to start the game. That hasn't happened in forever. And so, I mean, one of those weird, weird nights. But you're right. I mean, I do think that for the people who many locally here want to run Julius Randle out of town because Cat is putting up all these big numbers in New York, and Julius has been kind of an awkward fit at times, there are games like tonight where they really miss him because he is able to play physical, be a bully ball guy, get to the line, get some buckets to stem the tide when other people aren't knocking down shots. Naz, the three-pointer, can come and go a little bit. And it just seemed like he was a little off kilter and wild tonight. And when that happens, then he's more of a sixth man and not, you know, your potential starting power forward. I still think long term he's great and he can be a starting power forward in this league. But there are nights like that where you're like, okay, it would be nice to have Randle's kind of more repeatable offense to go to every once in a while.
You mentioned that 0 for 16 start. I mean, they're down 16-0 until 4:56 remaining in the first quarter when Rudy Gobert hit his second of two free throws. Was that horrible start for Minnesota more about the Cavaliers, in your opinion?
I mean, yeah, certainly the Cavaliers are great. And I mean, they have so much length. And I do think that there was a bit of a step up in weight class from the teams they have been playing lately. The Timberwolves have their schedule right now is about to get really rough. They went through a portion of the schedule where they're playing, even though Portland's playing really well, they're an entirely different animal than facing Cleveland. I mean, you look at what they can throw at you both defensively and offensively, and it did look like the Timberwolves were caught off guard by facing a true championship contender. And by the time they sort of got their legs underneath them, it was too late. I mean, it was 18-1 before they had their first field goal with, I think, 2:52 left in the first quarter. I mean, you know, so some of that was just a bad shooting night. I mean, you know, Naz is not going to miss the open shots that he missed. Ant started, I think, 1 for 8 at least before he really got going. Dillingham was off. Everyone was just kind of broke early in the game. And, you know, it's make or miss league and some of that will happen. But Cleveland is, I mean, they're monsters in the front court and they just bother you so much that I do think that the Wolves were a little shell-shocked early on.
I mean, Cleveland just looks massive. Like, they're already big enough with Mobley and Allen out there. Then now they add DeAndre Hunter from the Hawks with their trade deadline addition. And Hunter, I mean, obviously Ant goes off throughout the night, but Hunter's just massive out there. He just looks so big with that front line. And so Cavs have some guys out in that game as well. But once they get, you know, Strus and, you know, Wade and Hunter all together and they have these big wings, it's such a dramatic change. What were your impressions of Hunter tonight in this matchup?
I love the pickup of Hunter for the Cavs. I just think that he is an upgrade over LeVert when you look at kind of the two-way capabilities. And I do think that he is going to get great shots in that offense. We saw it tonight. They're going to be wide open looks because of all the firepower he has around him. And so I think that you're going to see some of his shooting numbers go up, whereas maybe you weren't quite seeing what you wanted to from in that regard with Atlanta. But I think when we fitting into Cleveland's system, just a dogged defender with length, but also he is going to be shooting the ball a lot better just with the way they move the ball, the way they get out clean looks in the corner and semi-transition. That's perfect for his game. And so, you know, I just love the fit. I think it's going to be great for them, and he's going to be, you know, really strengthen that Cavs team going down the stretch. It would have been nice for the Wolves. Not only were they missing Randle, they were missing DiVincenzo. They're missing you know, Mike Conley as well. Would it have been a little bit different with all three of those guys? Yeah, it probably would have been, but still, you put Hunter on that team, like you said, with Strus, with all these guys, and then Donovan Mitchell just is so, him and Garland are so freaking dynamic. It's amazing. They're going to be a load in the playoffs, man.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland's a legitimate, you know, serious threat to Boston,
yeah,
taking them down in the Eastern Conference for sure. Whereas with Minnesota, you know, they're, you know, they make the West Finals last year. They'd make the Cat trade. Don't do anything at the deadline. And like you said, they had some guys out tonight. Nikhil Alexander Walker in that starting lineup, kind of in that point guard-ish spot. For Finch, I mean, that horrible start. I'm watching the game, surprised he's not calling a timeout. I just felt like the starting lineup pulled the plug, put an end to this madness. But with Nikhil Alexander Walker in that spot, part of me wonders, you know, I've been on this a few times in recent weeks. I would just like to see Dillingham thrown out there. I just want to see Dillingham get 30 minutes a night. Like when you don't have Conley and you don't have DiVincenzo, why not just throw him out there and see what happens? Why are we not seeing that?
Yeah, I do think he should be playing more, KOC, for sure, because I think that you have to look at this regular season as just the learning ground for the playoffs. So you hope that by the time you get to the playoffs, and hopefully you're in, you know, in the playoffs and not in that play-in, you can have a young man who's ready and understands where to get his shots, understands how to use his quickness, but also how to cover up his lack of size, and just kind of learns the game a little bit more so he can be ready to give you buckets off of the bench. That's what they're going to need, and that's what Dillingham can do. Clearly, though, right now, Chris Finch doesn't trust the defense, and I think especially in games like tonight against heavyweight contenders, I think he's just reluctant to put him out there in high leverage situations. And you do see tonight, I don't think he played well. I think that he was bothered by the speed of Cleveland. I think he had some really bad turnovers, was, you know, airballing some threes. Now, as a rookie, you're going to have nights like that, and you need to be able to play through some of that. But it's clear that right now he has yet to fully earn Chris Finch's trust. But I do think if you want to look at quibbles with Chris Finch and the way that he's done the job so far this year, kind of having Dillingham more glued to the bench until he absolutely had to is probably stunting his growth just a little bit, as you're trying to decipher, is this a future starting point guard for you? Is this guy going to be just a bucket getter off the bench? What do you know? It's hard to say right now just because we haven't seen enough of him yet, but he still has a long way to go as well.
So on Monday afternoon, a report came out that an arbitration panel sided with Mark Lohr and Alex Rodriguez in a sales contract dispute against current Minnesota Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor. Last year, Taylor had claimed that Lohr and Rodriguez missed a payment deadline. That was in March of 2024, and that led him to withdraw the team from the sale for $1.5 billion. A-Rod and Lohr countered. They said they were entitled to a 90-day extension, and they accused Taylor of seller's remorse due to the team's increased valuations. As we've seen multiple teams go for more than $3, $4 billion since then. It seems like we're heading towards A-Rod Lohr taking over here, John. Is that your impression, that we are full on going towards this path here, or is Taylor possibly going to be pushing back here?
Yeah, I think, Kevin, it looks like we're going that way. Just, you know, to get into a little bit of the weeds of the arbitration process, the ruling that the panel gave today is binding. So that is written into the purchase agreement that both sides will accept the arbiter's ruling and go forward. There is not technically a way to appeal this ruling to get the arbitration panel to reconsider. What could happen is Glenn Taylor could try to take this to federal court and say and get a judge to vacate the ruling. But from all the legal experts that I talked to, the threshold for making that case is very difficult. And so he would have to prove that one of or multiple of the arbitrators were compromised or biased in some way, or he would have to prove that the panel overstepped its authority in the way that it issued the ruling. Those are two very difficult things to prove. I had been told leading up to this KOC that it was unlikely that Glenn Taylor would challenge the ruling. He would accept what happened. He has not stated publicly whether he will or he won't. So I think it's still slightly up in the air. But right now, it does look like we are going towards Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez production here. One thing that is important to note here is that they do not take over immediately because this ruling went their way. They have to be approved by the NBA. They have to go through the whole approval process, have them have their financials looked at, and then have the Board of Governors vote. They need 23 votes from the existing ownership to be approved. They're confident that will happen, but that will probably take several weeks, I would think, to play out before we get a final stamp of approval for Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez.
Now, last playoffs, when Taylor was trying to, you know, bar them from being at the arena and whatnot, they've had no say or power in anything since then, right? Like with the Cat trade or the decision to not make deals at the deadline. It's been all Taylor as team owner since then, correct?
So yeah, Taylor had all of the final decision and final say on any move that happened between then and now. I do think it's important to note that when they made the Cat trade, all of the ownership, including Laurie and Rodriguez, were on board with that. So I think that I feel honestly for Tim Connelly and the front office that has been kind of stuck in the middle of this divorce. They're like the kids in the middle trying to like placate both sides and make sure that they're keeping everyone included. It's been a very, very difficult last 9 or 12 months as these two sides have fought so bitterly. And so, yes, Glenn Taylor has had the final say on everything so far, but I do think that there have been efforts made to at least try and decipher, okay, are Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez okay with this move? Because if they win the arbitration, they will be the ones saddled with whatever moves that we are making. And so there's been some consideration given to that, though clearly they could not make any demands. They could not veto any deals, and they could not make final approvals on any deals. That all resided with Glenn Taylor.
Now, Tim Connelly has an option this offseason, correct? Mm-hmm. Is he more likely to stay with A-Rod taking ownership potentially?
I mean, it seems so. Laurie and A-Rod were the ones who recruited him from Denver. Glenn Taylor was the one who signed the check and who ultimately had to approve of the lucrative package that he got to leave Denver and come to Minnesota. But it was clear that Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez were the ones who went out, found out that he was pseudo available, and then kind of convinced him to make this leap. And so I do think that there is comfort there with Laurie and Rodriguez and Tim Connelly. And so going into this summer, he does have an option. I'm assuming that if things continue to go well for the Timberwolves, maybe he parlays that into an extension or to some more money that way. But I would say it's probably more likely that he stays now. Was it for sure that he was going to leave when if Glenn Taylor held on to it? I'm not willing to go that far on it, KOC, but I do think, yes, that because Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez are the ones that brought him here, they're probably more likely to convince him to stay.
I mean, it's a lot in flux for Minnesota this offseason, especially, you know, deadline Thursday happens, all the KD drama. And then, you know, I'm hearing from people around the league, well, you know, it sounds like this team made a call for KD. That team made a call for KD. The one team I didn't hear but was reported was Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Minnesota doesn't have future picks. So like I'm that's where I'm a little confused with. I'm sure like financially they would probably have to offer Randall and McDaniels in a deal for KD, but I'm just intrigued by that going out there considering the friendship between Anthony Edwards and Kevin Durant. Do you think the Minnesota interest in KD, or even just broadly the interest in making another big deal, is genuine from Minnesota despite their lack of assets, or is this about like, hey, we're trying, Ants. We're going for it, like trying to, you know, please him.
Yeah, no, Sam Amick, my colleague, and I, we reported extensively on that process on trade deadline day. And I do believe the interest was real. You know, they looked hard at Kevin Durant. Because they're a second apron team, it was going to take them moving heaven and earth to make it happen. You're right, KOC, they don't have a ton of a charter trove of future picks to throw into the deal. They do have the Detroit pick from, you know, this year, assuming that conveys if they make the playoffs. So they have that to use. But I think that they were really looking at what kind of hoops they would have to jump through to make something happen. Ultimately, nothing did happen because a part of it, I think, is they would have had to eradicate all of their depth, essentially, to bring him in here right now. But as you know, KOC, the first conversation is often laying the groundwork
yes.
for future. And so I do believe that Anthony Edwards will keep a close eye on his buddy, Kevin Durant. They have incredible respect for each other. They loved playing together in the Olympics. KD really, really likes Ant. And so this, you know, depending on how it goes in Phoenix the rest of this year and going into this summer, I think it's going to be easier for the Timberwolves to kind of get into these conversations and things when you're not facing that tight deadline that they were this last week. And so I would absolutely expect them to revisit that possibility. I think it is genuine. I do not think they're trying to placate Anthony Edwards in doing this. And it would not surprise me at all for Tim Connelly to pull off some kind of a deal. He's already traded for Rudy Gobert. He's traded Karl Anthony Towns. He's made big, big splashes in his short time here in Minnesota. And so he's not afraid to pull the trigger on a wild one if they think it'll vault them into contention again.
And what would help is KD will have only 1 year remaining on his deal. He's
exactly.
in his mid-late 30s. If he says, I want to play in Minnesota and only Minnesota, and that is the only place I will sign an extension, that will just completely remove everything we're talking about with the lack of assets that the Timberwolves have. And they'll have more, of course, this offseason with an additional year of first being potentially available to move depending on what happens. But for them, that would definitely increase their chances. So we'll see how the season plays out. Do you think Minnesota has any chance to be back in the West Finals this year? Any chance at all? Or is that out?
I can't rule it completely out. I wouldn't bet on it, KOC, for sure, just given the up and down nature that we've seen from them so far. But if you look at all of their net rating, defensive rating, offensive rating since right around Christmas, it has been on the steady climb in the positive direction. They are, I think now, if I remember right, I think they're 13-7 in their last 20, and five of those seven losses have been by 2 points or less. They're right in every game. They're losing a lot of clutch games right now. I think they have 19 clutch losses this season, by far the most in the league. So they're not, other than tonight, they're not getting blown out. They are competitive and they are showing signs of going in the right direction. And I do think that everything is so compact in the West outside of Oklahoma City that if you get the right matchup, they could win a series or two series. Would I think that their chances against Houston in the first round with Anthony Edwards is good? Yeah, I would like their chances in a series like that. Do I think they also could lose to Dallas or someone in the play-in if that happened? Yeah, they could do that too. That's the variance in the Western Conference this season. But I have generally been more favorable toward them over the last month or so, just because I think things are starting to come together. If you get DiVincenzo back, you get Randall back in a role he's more comfortable with, they could do some damage. They could also get swept right out of there too. It's a crazy year in the West.
I mean, that does sum up the state of the West for sure, John. Thank you for joining me today, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me, man. Huge fan.
All right, time for Just Riffin'. Thank you, everybody, for sending your questions to me on X and emailing them to kscshow@yahoosports.com. From S. Raven, what is the ceiling of Amen Thompson? It's all NBA. It's top 10 player in the league because already in year two, this dude is one of the best defenders in all of basketball. Super versatile. He just manipulates players with sometimes he'll look off somebody and then swipe at the ball, the block shots at the rim. It feels like he's everywhere all at once on defense. And then offensively, we're seeing this dude blossom. He's averaging near 20 points per game since he was inserted into the starting five. Ever since, he's been really handed the keys to the offense, averaging 7-8 assists per game with limited turnovers. And he rebounds. He does all the little things. He's a screener. I had Danny Green on the podcast a few weeks back who compared him to Andre Iguodala. I think he's going to be better than Iguodala. He can be better than that. A modern version of him, sure, but this dude's an elite athlete. I wouldn't say MVP potential, but first team All-NBA, I would not rule that out for Amen Thompson. This dude's serious legit. From Andrew, can a healthy Mitchell Robinson raise the Knicks championship ceiling? Yes, that's the short answer. He does raise their ceiling for sure. He would help them out significantly. But in the second part of your question, you asked if they need more depth. I don't know if they need more depth, but they might need Tibbs to play more depth. And that's still my concern with this team is like, do they run out of gas again like they did in last year's postseason? Because I feel like from a talent standpoint, especially with a healthy Mitchell Robinson, they've got enough to make a deep run. Now, you know, we see the Celtics beat them recently. Do we see the issues with that matchup? Of course, I still have questions about them in a 7-game series against Boston. But Mitchell Robinson would give them the ability to play some two big lineups that we just haven't seen Tibbs go to or, you know, have the ability to go to too much over the course of the season because of a reluctance to do it with Kat and Jericho Sims. And, you know, I don't think they have any other real bigs besides Mitchell Robinson. Nobody else in that roster is a real big. So getting him back whenever it happens, and there's been varying reports about when he'll return, the sooner the better on Mitchell Robinson, because I do think they need him to win a championship. And never mind Boston. What about getting through Cleveland with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen and now DeAndre Hunter added to that front line, all the depth and size that the Cavs have now? They're not that same Cavs team that we saw against the Knicks recently. So I think for the Knicks, they need Mitchell Robinson. From Jacob, are the Denver Nuggets still title contenders after a quiet trade deadline? Yes, obviously. They have Jokic. Anytime you have Jokic, you have an opportunity to make a deep run. And then we're seeing this roster start to come along. Jamal Murray, been slowly trending up over the course of the season. Young guys. I mean, tonight, Jalen Pickett for Denver looks like Jokic, the guard version out there for that team. And that's the Calvin Booth vision. It just is. Calvin Booth drafted Pickett to be that playmaking guard with size who can provide relief for Jokic when he's on the off the floor or play with him when they're on the floor together. And so I think for Denver, you're seeing this begin to make sense. And I think they're going to end up being the 2 seed, which would mean they get to avoid Oklahoma City until a Western Conference Finals. And with OKC, by that point, who knows? By late May, is Chet still durable at that point? Is he still on the floor? Is Hartenstein still on the floor at that point when both of those guys have suffered injuries? Will they have the ability to contain Jokic even if they are? Yes, Denver's still a contender for sure. From Righteous Nomad, what do you think Stephon Castle's ceiling is? I think it's similar to what I said about Amen Thompson earlier. Just maybe slightly lower because of the athleticism, but Castle has all NBA potential as well. We already see this guy defend at a high level. We already know what he can do on that end of the floor. We already know he's willing to do the little things, screening, crashing the boards, cutting to the basket. He did all of that at UConn as well. That's nothing new. But the scoring surge we've seen from him, scoring 25 plus multiple times in recent weeks, looking like a downhill attacker, decelerating on those drives to the rim. He has a feel for the game as a playmaker. It's just a matter of what level does the jumper reach? If the jumper reaches an elite level, we're talking about a first team All-NBA guy. If the jumper reaches an average or above average level, I still think we're talking about somebody that has third team All-NBA potential. That's why I had him ranked third in my board the entire season. I had him ranked one at one point. I probably should have kept him there instead of moving him behind Donovan Clingan, who went to Portland, and Reed Sheppard, who went to Houston. I might end up regretting that, but top three, I mean, to me, he's, you know, without a doubt going to be one of those guys that we have in All-NBA conversations for many, many years to come. From Taco, what's the basketball equivalent of what we just saw happen to the Chiefs? I mean, first of all, that was satisfying to watch on Sunday. As a Tom Brady guy, I do think it is time to just relax about all that GOAT talk. Mahomes is only 29 years old. Brady had seven. He dominated into his 40s. Let's chill out. This might be the last time we see Mahomes in a Super Bowl. Who knows? It can take a long time to get back like it did for Brady after the first three Super Bowls they won in his mid-20s, not getting back until 07-08 with the undefeated team losing to the Giants. I thought Nick Wright on First Takes First said it perfectly on his show. That performance by the Eagles defense was really a reminder of the Giants defense in that Super Bowl against the Patriots, you know, where it's like Brady before that game was like, they think we're only going to score 14. They ended up scoring only 17. But to answer your question, Taco, I think it's the Lakers failing to repeat in 1989, which is where this whole three-peat rights to that phrase comes from with Pat Riley. They got swept in the finals after winning two in a row. Kareem looked old, kind of like Travis Kelce did. Magic Johnson got hurt. We see Chris Jones get hurt. Not perfect parallels here, but all these types of factors, guys underperforming like Mahomes did. It was the worst series the Lakers had. They ran out of gas after a long run, sort of like the Chiefs did. I don't think it's a perfect parallel by any means for a lot of reasons. Like, you can't compare Travis Kelce to Kareem, but you get my point there. I think the Heat losing to the Spurs in the early 2010s, that's another one with a chance to three-peat as well. But more contemporary, I do think it's more like the Warriors' 73 wins and losing in the finals, blowing a 3-1 lead. It's more like that. Just the enormity of the position that you're in to have one of the greatest teams ever and then blowing that opportunity. I'd say that's the most contemporary example. And there's really nothing on the horizon that would come close to that at all, unless the Celtics win again this year and have a juggernaut next year and lose it. But other than that, I don't think anything comes close in present-day NBA at all, Taco. But that's a good question. Thank you. From Liam, if you were commissioner, what's the first thing you would change? Games begin on time. If it's listed at 7 p.m., it starts at 7 p.m. If it's listed at 7:30, it starts at 7:30. If you want to have the game broadcast begin at 7:30, but you want to list the start time at 7:47, start it at 7:47, then you know. Then you know. You can tune in at 7:30. You're going to get 17 minutes of previews and commercials before the game tips off. Starting games on time is the first thing I would do if I were put in charge as NBA commissioner. From Nick, what's your biggest regret in life? I think there's two answers to this one. The first one, like, really doesn't matter too much. I think it's a common thing for a lot of people. It's being a wuss in high school and college with girls. I was too afraid of denial and failure. I would just put off talking to a girl if I had interest in them. I was, you know, too hesitant about it. And I think over time, you really just learn you got to shoot your shot. So I think to anybody who is of high school or college age who listens to this, like, you can't worry about if somebody says no or if they laugh at you or like what your friends might think or what whoever might think. So this doesn't matter. And that's like a life thing more than anything else. So I think it being something that I could have learned in that context of having a crush and being hesitant to pursue that, it's something that would then translate to other areas of life. Because I think I've seen that kind of manifest everywhere for me where I'm not afraid of anything or anybody to talk to anybody. So I think just learning to not worry about failure and worry about denial in life in general is a very valuable lesson. So I'd say that's the first one, but that's kind of a natural thing that a lot of people talk about. I'd say the second one, I mean, today, you know, February 11th, it's been 5 years since my dad passed away from cancer. And I think, you know, that whole year I wrote the story, you know, about him getting diagnosed and all that in May or something like that. It published on The Ringer of 2019. And like tons of people, I mean, probably a lot of you listening were might have been listening or reading me at the time back then too. So many people hit me up and said, like, ask your dad a ton of questions. Ask your dad everything that you wanted to ask him. I think I asked him a lot. I'd say the biggest regret is I still didn't ask him enough. Like, there's some certain questions that it's like you wouldn't have thought to ask, but it's like, damn, I wish I did. Because I remember during his service, one of his best friends from childhood said to me, like, something along the lines of, you know, your dad used to love drawing when he was young. When we went to elementary school together, he used to love drawing. It's like, my dad loved drawing? He didn't have like an artistic bone in his body. So I wish I could have asked things like, when did that leave you? Why'd you stop drawing? Like, well, why is that something that you didn't continue picking back up later in life? I think little things like that to kind of get to know the past versions of himself and not just the present day version of him, the person I knew him to be as my father. I wish I had been able to ask more of those questions. But ultimately, you know, I feel like I asked him a lot. So it's not a big regret necessarily. I guess I don't have a lot of big regrets. It's more like just little things that, you know, you wish you could have done a little bit more along the way. Last question from Matt. On a brighter note, we'll end this one. From Matt, your favorite classic rock bass riff. You must see the bass hanging over my shoulder. I'm not a big bass player. I still need to, you know, learn and get better at that. But favorite bass riff. Money by Pink Floyd's, you know, by, you know, Homer pick as a Pink Floyd guy. But I'd say Close to the Edge by Yes. I mean, Chris Squire has some of the best bass lines in music history, not just classic rock history, but Close to the Edge. There's so many in that song that are my favorites. And then specifically, the moment leading into the end guitar solo in The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. Just that riff just gets me so fired up. Just that, you know that, but the chain by Fleetwood Mac, that's so good. But yeah, those three: Money, Close to the Edge, The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. If you want to hit me up for mailbag questions for a future episode, hit me on email at kocshow@yahoosports.com or at X at Kevin O'Connor NBA. I'll also put some posts up there as well, prompting people for questions as well. But you can also just message me anytime and I'll take notes of those. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Thanks to Dumin for coming on to talk Lakers, AD, and a whole bunch else to talk at the top of the show. Thanks to John for coming on as well to talk Minnesota and Cleveland. Thanks to you for the questions. Thanks to Stone and Mike for producing. Hope you have a great rest of your day. We'll be back later in the week to talk about whatever's going on in the NBA, little All-Star preview as well. And we have a whole bunch coming in the weeks ahead. So have a good one. Talk soon.